Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, and today we have Astra. Astra, beautiful, why don't you introduce yourself?
Thank you, Leticia. Yeah, well, it's so good to be here and so glad to connect. My name's Astra. I'm a spiritual advisor, and I like to say I'm a soul and self researcher. For the last 20 years or so, both personally and professionally, I've been exploring what it means to be a human being on the planet, to be a spiritual being having a human experience. And a big part of that has been understanding trauma and understanding pain. In a spiritual vocabulary, we would call it suffering, that all of us are suffering, often at an existential level, from the trials and tribulations of our life. And I work with people and organizations and create resources to help us live these better lives and really connect to our souls on a very deep level. And one of the reasons I've come to do that work is through recognizing that as a young person, I experienced multiple layers of what would be called trauma, from being very young and having quite a lot of emotional neglect growing up in a house with that, being a child of divorce, which, even though it's very common, still really affects children in an incredible way. And then a big traumatic event of my life was when I was 16, in my first sexual relationship, I was raped. And it wasn't the sort of thing that you think about rape or sexual assault that happens in the movies or happens in books, this kind of dark stranger in the night. It was actually someone I knew, someone I cared about and loved, and who I thought loved me. And I didn't have any of the emotional or relational intelligence to know what was happening, what was right, what was wrong. I didn't have any of the language around boundaries, around consent. I'd never been taught any of that stuff. And it happened multiple times, and I just didn't know how to deal with it. And like so many people who've experienced sexual assault, sexual trauma, that pain lived in my body for decades afterwards. And it was a kind of compounding effect from these younger experiences as well. But it resulted in things like a total disconnection from my body, complete lack of physical exercise or physical care for my body, because I just thought it was wrong in some way. I thought that my body had caused the pain that I'd experienced, and this is common with lots of trauma survivors, is our brain wants to control it. So we make it our fault because then we can control it rather than feeling unsafe and seeing the world as chaotic, and that people, good people do bad things and bad people, well, they exist. And I also experienced a lot of things like disordered eating and difficulty exercising and a lot of difficulty with maintaining effective and healthy romantic and sexual relationships. So intimacy was just so difficult for me. Physically, I felt afraid, but emotionally, I didn't have the tools. I didn't have the language to work with it. And it meant that I was, I think, quite a bad partner for quite a long time. And I cheated and I didn't say things and I was resentful and I argued in this kind of bitchy way that was just, it wasn't really about solving any problems. It was about this trying to express my pain and not understanding it. And I think what a lot of people don't realize about this interpersonal trauma, like sexual trauma or like emotional neglect, is that it also affects things like how you show up at work. So my relationship, with like male managers was awful because I just saw this like replica of someone who'd hurt me. And you're kind of constantly trying to prove yourself and prove your worth, because you've never really felt worthy, and then you've had these experiences of pain and intimate trauma that have convinced, they convinced me that I was, there was just something deeply, deeply wrong with me, and there was like, there was no way from under it. That's how it felt. That's how it felt.
So what was the turning point for you?
It's interesting, when I was at school doing my history GCSE, we had this amazing history teacher, and she always used to say, there's no such thing as a turning point. Nothing ever happens overnight. And looking back, it was a kind of series of slow events, but some of them were quite big. One of them was having a spiritual awakening, having a connection with a deep part of myself that was beyond that pain. It was, in therapy, sometimes it's called the compassionate witness. It's beyond all of the trauma that still felt good and whole and loved and loving. So having that was really important, having this amazing spiritual awakening. And it was like, you couldn't make it up. It was a shamanic sound bath in Glastonbury. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just ticked all the boxes above a crystal shop. So that was part of it. But then, like a lot of people who have spiritual calling, I had this amazing experience. I didn't know how to integrate it. And so I just sort of pushed it away. So another big aspect of these series of turning points, as it were, was actually getting really unwell. So I'd all my life, I'd suffered with kind of these niggling little chronic things, like lots of UTIs, incredibly painful periods, general underlying poor health, and there is evidence to suggest that gynecological ill health is related or can be related to sexual trauma in people with kind of female human reproductive systems. So I'd suffered all these kind of like just niggling things, and it got to a point a couple of years after the spiritual awakening where I became very unwell, to a point where I just collapsed on Boxing Day after like hosting a family Christmas. I just couldn't cope. And in the months preceding that, I had missed work. I'd missed work so much that it triggered like an HR, an official HR process. I'd forgotten meetings. I'd was finding it difficult to spell. And like, I'm a writer by trade, that's where I come from. So to me, it was just this huge thing. And it turned out I had a chronic vitamin D deficiency. And you just think, vitamin D, is that it? But it almost was, to me, what was so powerful about that, it was so simple. It was such a simple solution, which was get out in the sun, enjoy life, get out there a bit more. And I hadn't done it. But head down, focus, like working, working, working. And I'd got so unwell from this one small change that I could have made. And I think that was really when I chose to stop ignoring that the call I was having to live in a different way. Because up to that point, it had been me trying to work out how to keep surviving and be in survival mode, but have this magical spiritual thing as well. And to me, that like final bit of illness was almost like my soul going, honey, you can't have both. You've either got to thrive with this spiritual endeavor and your connection to source, or you're going to survive, but you're not going to have that deep connection. And I had to choose, you know, I didn't have to choose. I chose. And I, yeah, no regrets. No regrets at all.
Most people don't have regrets with being able to take radical ownership of their life and start thriving. And I think what I connected with most with your story was that disconnection from your body. We talk about how trauma lives in the body. We don't talk about the disconnection almost. And it's almost like our subconscious mind starts rejecting the body that holds the trauma, right? Like,
100%.
so many people deal with ailments, or you know, they have issues with external factors like alcohol or drugs or even food because they aren't comfortable or they have become disconnected from their body. And it was interesting also when you talked about how your the way that you dealt with your trauma was almost compounded, right? Like you spoke about the emotional n neglect that you experienced as a child, which then kind of led into you not being connected with the man that you eventually we're dealing with that then led to this disconnection from males, period, in that space. And like I think oftentimes as people who experience trauma, we aren't able to pick the piece, put the pieces back together, which is why I think that part of your story was really powerful because we don't think about how our interpersonal relationships can be impacted. And essentially, your issues with interpersonal relationships came as a result of the trauma you experienced with interpersonal relationships.
Absolutely. And there's, I think there's a, you know, I was trained academically and have always been fascinated by systems. And if we imagine that we tend to see our life as like a long string, but that's almost like two dimensional. We can only see what's in front of us and what's behind us. But our life is actually this relational web. It's a cobweb. And just as if, you know, a spider was here and a fly was over there, if one bounced, this would shake. And actually being able to see, not necessarily that it's a puzzle that all fits together neatly and it makes a picture, you know, that's going to take a lifetime of work to see that. But just recognizing that all of these things within us are connected, they have constructed our approach to life and many, many good things, as well as many, many bad things. It's not a case of, you know, I know that if I hadn't experienced some of the pain in my past, I wouldn't have the level of compassion and empathy I have now. To me, being able to see it as this web of where things are connected and drawing the dots, seeing the pattern, is one of my strengths. I know that it's something that I offer to others as a strength when you're kind of blinkered by the pain or by the suffering. But just zooming out a bit, even just naming those connections can bring so much relief. And I guess it, as you mentioned, in healing from that and removing myself from some survival mode, it's a similar experience. This idea that we can go to a yoga class or start meditating once or go to therapy once and then we're just like done. It's like everything changes. When you start shaking that web and moving it and finding something more secure and calm, everything is going to change. And I used to say to my students when I was a university lecturer, you know, they'd come to me for their project and they'd have this massive list of things to do. And they'd be like, where shall I start? And I would say, it really doesn't matter because you're going to have to do all of it. So it's kind of like pick the thing that you just feels right now, knowing that you will look at all of these other elements, like your body's connection, your health, your well-being, your mental state, your environment, your partners. It will all change.
And that's so key. You know, I say that there are three phases to accident survival mode. First one is awareness, second one is reprogramming, and third is reinvention. And what you spoke about there was, you know, the awareness that this one thing impacts everything. But oftentimes we view our issues and our life experiences as siloed events. There isn't anything that's siloed. Everything impacts everything else. And it may be just a small reaction to something that you've experienced that changes the way that you show up in life completely. Like, one of the biggest things that was like eye-opening for me as I began my healing journey was understanding my trauma responses, right? And being able to, first of all, pinpoint where they began, like what was the trigger for that to become now the way that I live my life, and then also understanding what then triggers the trauma response for me, because they can be two separate things. And I'll give an example, right? I remember being about 9 or 10, my dad gave me a credit account at a bookstore. Like, I was an avid reader, like 2 or 3 books a week was a minimum. And there was never a discussion about how much money I should be spending. It was like, you can go to the bookstore and get books. So I went to the bookstore and I got books to the a crazy amount of maybe $400 or $500 a month. And I remember my father getting extremely annoyed at the fact that I spent all of this money on books. That created a trauma response for me that I didn't uncover until I started my business, but I couldn't justify spending money on myself once I started making money. I would spend money on everybody else. Like, you came to me, you asked for money, I would give you my last. But for me to justify spending money on myself, I had to go through this whole process. And someone who may not understand trauma responses will might be like, how are they connected? What I learned from the experience with my father was I needed permission to do for myself. And that's how it showed up. I didn't learn that I needed permission to do for other people, which probably led to me having lack of boundaries and all of that. I learned that I needed permission for me. And then that's how it showed up. And it showed up in my relationships. It showed up at work. It showed up in almost every space imaginable where I couldn't consider myself. I didn't know how to consider myself. And it wasn't just about money. You know what I mean? It was, how do I put myself first? How do I prioritize me? And that's something over the last 6 years or so that I've actively had to work on to rewrite that narrative that was created when I was 10.
It's a hard one, isn't it? Because there's sometimes it's really hard to actually identify where the trigger comes from. And I see people sometimes get stuck in that you've identified it is almost like that's such a superpower to be able to go, like you're saying, connect the dots. But for a lot of people, I see that they go, oh, I've just had this behavior. It's come from nowhere. I've got no idea where it comes from. And then they sort of use that to give themselves permission to just behave in a way they don't like or to behave poorly. I know there's things about myself that I haven't yet understood the source of that suffering. But that doesn't mean that I should ignore it. It means I can go, like, if you never connected that memory to that behavior, it helps to do that. But it's also okay to just work with the now and to work with what you've got now. But it's a really interesting one that people, I can see why people wouldn't see them as connected, but ultimately it's for anyone, you know, experiencing that trauma, only you know how it's shown up in your life. And it might be the most bizarre thing you've ever heard. You know, I know that for one, for me was I was brought up in an atheist household. Religion and spirituality was seen as for stupid people. It was something that only idiots believed in religion. So for me to come to a spiritual place and share that with people and be really active in that, I have really had to handle the idea of being rejected. Even though it would just never happen, and there's no indication of it. The pain there is that, well, if I believe this, then I must be stupid, therefore it can't be legitimate. It's like these subtle messages that it really does take time to unpack. And a good question that I offer with clients and workshops sometimes is when you have that response that seems to come out of absolutely nowhere, that just freaks you out, that you're just like, why am I overreacting? Is to ask the question, what does this remind me of? And it's like really simple, but it can be really useful to just go, do you know what? Actually, that really reminds me of when my dad did that thing at the bookshop. And your brain knows, like your brain already has all the information to connect the dots. It's just you've got to ask the right question to help it get there. So asking, wait a minute, what does this remind me of? And you will be amazed by what it like throws up. And then working with that is really key.
I think it's interesting you say that, right? Ask yourself a question. And I think for the listeners, the subconscious mind cannot resist a question. You will not have an answer right away, oftentimes, but eventually you will find it because your brain will seek the answer. So if you find yourself in a position where, you don't have the answers, ask. Simply ask a question. And it sounds like, oh, that's so easy, but no, it really does. The subconscious mind works in mysterious ways, and oftentimes I'm calling it our biggest up, but no, it absolutely cannot resist a question. And oftentimes, even working with my own clients, I think that's why coaching is so powerful, because it's question based as opposed to just unpacking your trauma. Your coach is going to ask you a million questions that you may not necessarily have the answer to right away, but eventually it comes to us in it may be kind of like off the cuff, the answer, but I think it's really important to be able to lean into questioning ourselves.
And
I've
the discomfort of that moment of not knowing,
yeah.
because that pause around, I'm going to just allow this little bit of doubt, I'm going to allow this bit of uncertainty, knowing that it's going to lead to something stronger. I know that for me, just leaning into the idea of like, what if I could have a healthy relationship? What if I could have sex and not feel afraid? Or like, what would that be like? What's this imagine? Like you said, the mind wants to answer. It loves puzzles. It wants to solve. It wants to find the answer. But so often our questions are instead things like, why did this happen to me? What's wrong with me? Who's ever going to love me? It's like the questions we ask are just terrible questions. Encouraging and training ourselves to ask better questions is a really useful skill. It's a self-coaching skill, isn't it? To do that and lead us out of being in that constant, not only a trauma response, but actually that kind of the suffering of staying with the narrative of this is awful and I'm awful and everything's awful. To just for me, you know, to change from like, why does no one love me to what if I could be loved? Or what if I'm already loved? It's so, it's just a little shift, but you
But it's a
feel the
powerful,
release. Yeah,
yeah, it's
it's
a
powerful. You
powerful
feel it.
reframe, yeah. And I think that's also an important note for the listeners. Like, you have to have compassion with yourself. And I know it's something that oftentimes has to be learned. But if we can pack away the blame, the self-blame in particular, if we can learn to pack that away and just get curious as to why we would have responded that way or why we received something that way, I think it takes away from the shame that's associated with our actions or the shame that's associated or the guilt that's associated with our experiences. And it gives us ownership, in a sense, to look at it in a different way.
We want to, we want to believe that we are perfect and good. And when you've experienced trauma, especially like that interpersonal, very close trauma, you are just filled with this idea that you're just wrong and that it's the self-loathing and the self-hatred. And as you said, the practice of compassion is actually not thinking that we're perfect or that we're amazing or we did nothing wrong. It's going, do you know what? That really sucked and that was really painful. And here's how I contributed or didn't contribute. And I'm just a person. I'm a person and I get things wrong and I snap and I argue and say things that I regret. But it's okay. And soothing that. It's kind of it's coming out of this idea of this binary, I'm either the victim or the perpetrator. And again, back into that witness of I'm both of those things, I'm none of those things, I'm something apart from that. There's a peaceful place within me that I know is where I am safe and I'll always be safe, I'll always be loved. It's coming back home to that for me. That has been, it's so powerful and it's unfortunately something that is still beyond the scope of a lot of personal development work, which is still operating at this very like cognitive improvement level, which this is about a really deep sense of existential grounding that can transform very quickly how someone feels by going, yeah, there's somewhere in me that has always been okay.
And believe in that. Because oftentimes, when we have sat in a space of trauma for so long, it's often hard to believe what we tell ourselves, right? So learning how to make these statements, even if the outside doesn't look like that in this moment, being okay with okay, not everything's lined up, not everything looks peachy keen, but I can feel better about this circumstance, which then can lead to the change in the way that we show up. I've spoke about this before, and I just want to mention this. Like, I think one of the key things about in my healing was understanding the connection between feelings, emotions, thoughts, and then action. And I, as a person like who understands that my actions are driven by my thoughts, I didn't understand how deep it went, like how a single emotion can change everything, but how we have choice over that emotion. I remember someone saying to me one day when I was very, very angry, that's a choice. And it pissed me off even more. Them
It's an
saying
awful,
that
a
to
terrible
me.
thing to say, like when you're in the middle of it.
But it pissed me off even more when they said it. But then having that understanding that, like, my emotions dictate my feelings dictate my thoughts then dictate my actions. Yeah, I can choose another emotion after I process. Because sometimes when you're in the middle, it's like, it's no way. You just stood on my toe for the fifth time after I told you. It's going to be really hard for me to change that in that moment. But allowing ourselves to process fully and also giving ourselves permission to be curious as to what else could be going on as a result of the emotion that's risen. Because I know for me, anger was my dominant emotion, like dominant, like I'm angry. What I didn't understand was that anger was really pain and sorrow that I didn't know how to express. But because I never really processed my emotions fully, I felt them and I held on to them, but never really processed. I wasn't able to see that there was something deeper going on, but anger was my safety net, because it kind of kept me safe. You know what I mean? Like,
It is. It's an inc it's that's its purpose. It's a getaway, you know, it's a getaway so that we have that space. And all, you know, we have this perception that emotions are this annoying thing that we have as humans that we have to deal with. And they kind of get in the way of us being productive and effective. But emotions are, they are meaningful, they're data. And if you go to work and consistently speak to someone and you consistently feel angry every time you speak to them, that is data for you to use. But we don't, it's like we can't allow ourselves, or lots of people can't allow themselves to see their emotions and get curious about it as that data to say, hey, I've been angry for years. Maybe there's a
Why?
reason for that. Yeah,
Yeah,
why?
why?
And it doesn't
Why?
mean that that anger, it doesn't mean that any emotion you're feeling isn't valid or justified or meaningful or important. It means that your attitude, it's like how you think about how you feel, changes. And it's, you know, the poet Rumi, in one of the English translations of his work, in one of his poems, it says, you know, welcome every emotion into your house as if they were a guest. It's like, let them come in. Treat them well because they're going to leave soon. And we don't do that. You know, there's some emotions. It's like we slam the door. You know, I don't want to feel disappointment. Get away. Or, oh, I desperately want to feel happy. So come in and try to stay, 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 stay. And that's what so many spiritual practices are actually about, is not about pushing anything away. It's letting them be these guests that are coming in and they're teaching us and they're telling us stories and we're growing and then they are leaving. And it's about learning that the level of compassion you need to relate to the feeling as it's with you in that moment, like the anger. And then also learning that it's okay for it to go. You'll still be safe. You'll still have all the things you need. You know, lots of people think that if they start thinking they are worthy and loved, then they'll have no ambition. Or, you know, if they're compassionate to themselves, then they're going to get lazy. But actually, if we learn that there are all these guests in our house that are coming in and going out, I've found, and I've seen in people I work with, the rate of change and evolution just speeds up because you're not grabbing on, you're not attaching yourself to all of these challenges, but you're also not attaching yourself to this positive outcome. And so you just, something don't work, you let it go. Something works, brilliant. See you later. Like, life goes so much faster and gets bigger and bolder because we're more comfortable with what emotions are about, you know, is moving through us.
I love that. And I think it's like really interesting. Like letting go is like the biggest gift, right? And I again, something I really didn't understand at one point until somebody said this to me. When you're holding on, you're holding on. And I'm gonna use my hands like you are holding on like a death grip. There is no capacity for anything else when you hold on so hard to emotions, experiences, outcomes. Like we can choke the shit out of these things, right? Letting go, opening up our grip, and I'm using my hands for a reason, is I have capacity now. I have capacity to process. I have capacity to be curious. I have capacity to change my mind here. It's a big difference. So when we can learn to let go, the world opens up for us in a multitude of ways.
Absolutely. And that takes time. It's the slow, maybe we can imagine it as a flower blooming. It's a fist unfolding is that slow unfolding of the flower blooming. And sometimes you're gonna want to bring it back in. But it is that it's you're relaxed, you're letting go. And we're not perfect. Sometimes I'm walking around just with a fist ball going, oh, everyone's so annoying, girl. But the more I'm learning and have learned to, as you say, like let that go and release, just more incredible things have come into my life. And I have had more capacity, not only for myself, but to give to others and to be for others what I did not have.
Absolutely. I have enjoyed this conversation as I expected to, because we
Yeah,
just vibe.
we do
We
rhyme.
vibe well off camera. So, Astra, tell the audience how we can connect with you online.
So there's a number of different ways we can connect. However, the one I'd like to invite people to do is that every 2 weeks, I run a free online group meditation. So if you have never meditated, but if you really see the value of it, if you want to quiet the chatter, if you want to get rid of some of those or release the attachment to some of those thoughts, this is the place to come and do it. It's very relaxed. It's not any particular type of meditation. It's just getting used to the idea of sitting together without constantly feeling the need to think and feel and do stuff, because that is the first step in letting go. And I recommend meditating to many people. Who doesn't recommend meditating? But it's actually quite hard, particularly for trauma survivors who might feel quite afraid of being in that silence, which is why I offer it. So we do it together. We do it online. I'll share the link in the show notes for that, but it's also on my website, which is higherlove.co and then /meditate. And it's, as I said, every 2 weeks, it's totally free. And it's very beautiful because it's about being together in a space of compassion. And it's something actually I wanted to mention where we were saying about extending that compassion to ourselves. One of the best ways we can actually do that is to be around someone who has that unconditional love for us. And a lot of us have grown up without that. So that meditative space that I create every 2 weeks is an endeavor to create a space of unconditional love for anyone who shows up. 30 minutes just together and to release that pain and sit in what it feels like to be connected and to be at peace.
I love that. So, yes, listeners, that information will be in the show notes. Astra, before we wrap it all up, one last key takeaway for the audience.
Wow. It's something that I say probably at least once a day. And I've said to nearly everyone I've worked with, hundreds of people now, which is there's nothing wrong with you. There is absolutely nothing wrong with you. And if you can believe that, even for a second, you are already on the way to truly healing. Because I believe that you, in fact, are perfect, just as you are right now. That's a big leap. So believing that just for a few seconds that actually there's nothing wrong with me, that's what I would want to offer to people, to just stay with that.
I love that. Listeners, there is nothing wrong with you. Astra, thank you so much for your time on Survival Mode Disrupted. Listeners, thank you for catching another episode. And I want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.